Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. This week's show, a little bit different. First off, I'm on vacation, but I recorded the show anyways. So we've got a new show with new content. It isn't quite so much the breaking news of the week, but some interesting conversation with interesting newsmakers. Among them, Kim Kardashian West, Hogan Gidley, who's the Deputy White House Press Secretary, and Ramin Sotoudeh, who wrote this book that's getting all sorts of buzz called Ladies Who Punch, the explosive story of The View. So we're going to talk about them in a moment, but let's begin with Kim Kardashian West. I've been trying to have a conversation with her for months and months, ever since she made news on the criminal justice reform front. We're finally able to make something work. It was at an interview about her launch of her sunglasses brand with Carolina Lemke. But then we had a chance to go deeper on the criminal justice reform issue and found her to be really, really kind and thoughtful and interesting. So here is that conversation with Kim Kardashian West. Where does that passion for criminal justice reform, for prison reform, come from?
Honestly, I had no connection to anyone that had really been in prison, so it might have seemed like an odd choice. I've always been about just what's fair. And when I saw Alice's case and I just saw that it was so unfair, it was if I thought that I could, you know, possibly do something to help her, I was going to try. And then once I kind of got into it and saw how many more unfair things go on constantly, I really wanted to dive in and do more. And so I really supported the First Step Act. And so many other people have gotten out because of that and other circumstances that, you know, we've been working on. And that just makes me happy.
And I know your dad was so important in that sort of role as well.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you to know that the Kardashian name is associated with helping all of these people? And what does it mean to you when you see all these people whose lives are totally, completely different because of you and because of the activism that you've done?
I mean, it just makes me want to do more. It makes me proud. It makes me just, it really does fuel me to want to do more and to help out as many people as I can.
What is your advice to all the young people who look at you and want to be like you when it comes to activism, when it comes to helping their community? What is your advice to all of them?
Well, I think, you know, I've been super inspired by so many people. And I think I was honestly the most inspired when I met with survivors from gun violence, like at Parkland. And I met with these young kids that are not even 20 years old, and they are running around the country speaking up for what they believe in, even if they're up against such a hard fight of changing gun laws. And that to me really didn't, I said, you know, if these kids are so motivated and they're not even 20 and I have such a huge voice, I really was inspired by them to use it. And so I would just, you know, encourage other people, if you strongly believe in something, like really hold firm to that and really just do what you believe in. Because, I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, you get older, you have babies, you have other life experiences that kind of force you to really think that it's not, you know, like there's more to life than just yourself, you know, that you really can help other people. I think that is so important when you realize that at a younger age. And I wish I did realize that at a younger age. That's why when I saw these younger kids being so active in the community, it was so inspiring to me.
And I know you've done a lot of work as well in Los Angeles on homelessness as well.
Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest misconception about homeless people? Because there's so many things out there, but you've sort of personally met with and dealt with a lot of people. What do you think is the biggest misconception about homelessness?
I think, you know, there obviously is a huge mental health issue in the homeless community and a drug issue. And I've spoken to so many people that would agree with that and have experienced that. But then there's also a huge community that has nothing to do with that. There's, like, I think the misconception about homeless people would maybe be that they wouldn't have a job, or, you know, I saw so many amazing, you know, women that would get up and go to work and then at the end of the day come home to the shelter because they just didn't have a place to live. And with inflation, I mean, they just couldn't, they were like one paycheck away from losing their apartment or home. And I think the homeless issue is, I mean, the mental health issue really needs light shined on it, and the homeless issue really needs light shined on it. There's so much more we can do, especially in Los Angeles. It's crazy on Skid Row. It is, is just taking over.
And last question, what is the biggest takeaway you want people to learn from all that you're doing?
I think that if anyone just took anything away, it's that you can really do whatever you want to do, and you have a voice, and you should use it, and find what you're passionate about, and I just teach my kids, like, just be kind. Be good people, treat everybody the same, treat everybody with respect. Nobody's better than anybody, and everybody needs help. So, you know, try to be that person for someone else.
Our thanks to Kim Kardashian West. Of course, you can hear more about that and those issues on Keeping Up with the Kardashians, which airs Sundays on E, now in its 16th season. Next up, a conversation about immigration with Hogan Gidley. Last week, we were at the border with President Trump. Immigration continues to be such a big issue. And here is more about the White House's position with Hogan.
The problem is, this has been a 40-year problem in the making. Congress has refused to come up with any lasting solutions whatsoever. The president was had a virtual mess just dumped on his desk, and now he's trying to fix it, and he's going to do everything in his power to do just that.
Speaking of that relationship with Mexico, how are negotiations going over Mexico paying for the wall?
Well, that's a great point. Look, there are so many options on the table, whether it's the USMCA deal that the president referenced before. They've been killing us on trade for years. That's one way they can pay for it. He also mentioned all types of potential ways, whether it be fees for those migrants coming into this country. Well, there are a lot of things the president can do to ensure that occurs. But this whole notion that the president isn't focused on that, he doesn't want to saddle the American government with that of the American taxpayer. But he never said he was going to make Mexico cut a check on the front end and then we deposit it and pay for a wall. He never said that. He said they would pay for the wall, and they will.
When it comes to the problem of immigration, there's so much focus on the symbolism of the wall and the border itself. But immigration so often is people getting on a plane and overstaying a visa. That's a huge problem in this country. Why is there not more talk about that?
Oh, there has been in this administration. For 2 years, we've been talking about it. Like three Octobers ago, we put forth an 88-point plan that included changes to those things like H-1B and H-1B visas as well. But right now, we have a crisis as it relates to people coming into the border as children, women, as family units. In the early 2000s, it was all Mexican men. We can easily send them back almost within a 24-hour time period. What we have now is not just people coming from other countries like Guatemala, Honduras and El Salvador, but it's now women and children. That changes the dynamic and what we can actually do to send people back. So that's a completely different situation than we were facing before. So those are the things we've got to change immediately.
Is there anything on the immigration front at all where you could see both parties working together, even if we don't do comprehensive immigration reform, but something that both parties could get together on?
I sure hope so, because Democrats for decades have been saying that they agree with building a wall. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden all said a wall was a good thing. They all said that if you come to this country illegally, you don't have a right to be here. Everyone used to be on the same page with this. It's only now that the political calculus has changed and that Donald Trump is in the White House that Democrats have absolutely stonewalled, forgive the pun and the metaphor, to this president. They don't like that he's in office, so they want to try and do something different and just be opposed to everything he would do to solve the crisis that faces this country.
And one question about you, just because we're curious. You work for a president who probably knows more about the press and the media than any president in the history of the presidency.
That's
who often
true.
Works as his own press secretary and often works as his own communications director. What is that like, working in a press shop for a president who is so focused on the press?
It's actually very refreshing. Listen, I've worked for candidates over my lifetime that have been good with the press and have wanted to be out in front of the press. And so many presidents hide behind their staff and let their staff do all the work for them. No, not this one. This president knows what he wants to convey to the American people. He takes it directly around the media without the filter of the late night pundits or the talk show hosts. Instead, he takes it to Twitter, or he just calls the press in and watches, or he allows the American people to see transparently how the sausage is made. Look at us arguing. Look at us have a conversation to try and move the ball forward. It's incredible to watch him work. And his instincts, quite frankly, are amazingly accurate. When we have conversations behind the scenes about what he wants, he asks for my opinion. He asks around the room. He likes to see that in real time. And then he takes his he makes his own mind up, takes all the information from us, and then takes it to their directly to the American people. And it has worked quite well for him. After all, he's the one sitting in the Oval Office behind my shoulder.
Yeah, is he a fan of your fashion?
We've not had that conversation, but listen, he's got his own line of clothes, so until I'm at that level, I'm just going to defer to him on that as well.
All right, well, Hogan Gidley, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it and look forward to seeing you. Thanks for joining us on The Issue Is.
Thanks so much.
Our thanks to Hogan Gidley. And now, a conversation about The View. Our next guest has written the New York Times bestseller called Ladies Who Punch, the explosive inside story of The View. Ramin Sotoudeh is the New York bureau chief for Variety. He spent 3 years researching the show, talking to every co-host with the exception of Whoopi Goldberg and Elizabeth Hasselbeck. And we're talking to him now. He joins us from New York, Ramin Sotoudeh. Welcome to The Issue Is.
Thank you for having me.
So one of the things you write about is how The View has really changed politics, but it didn't really start as a political show, right?
Not really. When Barbara Walters launched the show in 1997, she thought it would be this very friendly place for women to talk about the headlines of the day. And they would be discussing sort of big news, small news, pop culture. And the show really changed in 2003 when Elizabeth Hasselbeck was hired as the resident conservative on the show. And it offered a preview into the culture that we now live in, where you have different members at the same table, whether it be a Thanksgiving table or, you know, a lunch table, or discussing politics, and one member never really seeing things eye to eye with the other members. And that was Elizabeth's role in the show for many years.
Yeah, now you have two conservatives on the show, and Abby Huntsman and Meghan McCain. One of the characters from the show early on has been Donald Trump, who at the beginning of the show probably nobody would have ever thought would be the president one day.
No, Donald Trump was actually one of the fill-in guests on a day where they couldn't really get anyone of a bigger stature. Back in 1997, he was a New York real estate mogul. He loved doing publicity. Barbara Walters called in a favor, and he came in on a November morning and gave this interview to The View where he talked about his life sort of in this very, you know, Donald Trumpian way. And watching the interview back, it's kind of surreal to think that, you know, he's president.
And then he had this moment, which we just showed, where he said that he would be dating his daughter. Of course, he had the fights with Rosie O'Donnell over the years. You talk about him sort of as like a villain on the View.
He has been a villain, or at least a foil for the ladies to fight against. From the very beginning of the show, actually, the first season, Meredith Vieira was talking about one of Donald Trump's beauty pageants and some misogynistic comment that he made, and she kind of, you know, quips back at him. In 2006, he got into a very, very public feud with Rosie O'Donnell and offered a glimpse of the candidate that he would become on the campaign trail, going on every news program, bashing Rosie O'Donnell, using sexist language against Rosie O'Donnell, and really attacking her in the same way that he would later attack Hillary Clinton and his other contenders on the campaign trail.
And of course, Rosie O'Donnell was one of the first things he mentioned while he was in the middle of a presidential debate. Within seconds, he made a joke about Rosie O'Donnell, bringing the whole thing full circle. So you mentioned Hillary Clinton there. You said where Trump may have been the villain, Hillary was often seen as the hero.
She was in a lot of ways the phantom sixth co-host of The View. She was the lens through which a lot of the women saw themselves or viewed the world. And there, you know, from the very beginning of the show, there were discussions about women in politics, Hillary's place first as first lady, then as a candidate in 2008, then as Secretary of State, then again as a candidate in 2016. And the idea that a woman could be elected president really was in the DNA of the show when it first launched 22 years ago.
And Barack Obama, of course, ended up beating Hillary Clinton in one of those races, and he made daytime history on The View.
He did. The Obamas, both of them, were very open to appearing on The View. They knew the value of speaking to stay-at-home moms in the morning. And Barack Obama became the first sitting president to appear on a daytime talk show in 2010 when he went on The View to talk about his first 2 years in the White House and what he was doing to help middle-income families.
And then Michelle Obama was a co-host, and you tell a story about the fact that, she ended up finding an unlikely ally behind the scenes.
She did. In 2008, Michelle Obama writes about this in her memoir. She says that when she co-hosted The View, she really felt like she found her voice that summer, and she found sort of her role in the campaign. And in that morning in the Hot Topics meeting, this is uncovered in my book, Elizabeth Hasselbeck was having a really hard day juggling motherhood with her responsibilities at work, and Michelle Obama actually called Elizabeth that afternoon after they were done taping just to talk to her about the struggles of balancing both motherhood with her professional life and to give her kind of a pat on the back and to say, you know what, it's going to be okay.
That must have been
and
nice.
As Sherry Shepherd said to me in the book, Sherry Shepherd said something to the effect of, but Elizabeth didn't even like Michelle Obama, and she got this private call from the future First Lady, but Sherry Shepherd didn't.
So she was jealous of that moment. It clearly didn't work in convincing Elizabeth Hasselbeck to be an Obama voter. We know that for sure.
No, it didn't.
So now we're in this new campaign, and it seems like every candidate is going on two shows. Of course, the issue is, number one, and then going on The View as well. We saw Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, recently.
He
had this big death penalty announcement, and then he went right on The View. Why do you think that is? Why are so many candidates going to The View?
It really does feel like the road to the White House not only goes through Iowa and New Hampshire, but also through the ABC studios at The View. I think the show is an established brand. It was created by Barbara Walters. It is a place where you know that you're going to get smart, interesting questions. And also, you reach a really important demographic of primarily women who are staying at home, undecided voters, maybe not so sure who they're going to vote for. And they see their candidates on The View. And you can make up a lot of minds if you have a strong performance on The View.
Well, we want to put you on the spot a bit. We play a game on this show called The Name Game. This is where we get to play a little Beyonce, which I know it's not a bad thing, right? And then we get get your take. So we're going to say the names of some View co-hosts, and I want you to do one word or a really short phrase that comes to mind, okay? So we start with the queen of The View, Barbara Walters.
So, journalist.
Okay. Now to the original moderator of The View, Meredith Vieira.
Respected. She was the most beloved. Sorry, those are more than one word, but
Rosie,
beloved
now
would be my word.
Now, Rosie O'Donnell.
Passionate.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Influential.
Influential.
It's really hard to have one word to discuss Whoopi Goldberg. This is a very difficult game.
You can do short You can do short phrases if you want. Joy Behar.
Funny.
Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Frustrated.
Jenny McCarthy.
Lost.
And finally, Meghan
McCain. Like the TV show. The future of The View.
Have they had you on the show to promote you? Any talk about that?
Not yet. I think they should.
I think they should.
I would gladly go on The View to talk about the book about The View.
But
and also that's the show that this is the show that Barbara Walters created. No topic is really off limits on The View.
Well, you're welcome on The Issue Is, and we're glad to have you here. Thank you so much, Ramin. Congratulations
on
the book and all the headlines that have been made from it as well.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our thanks to Ramin. Next week on The Issue Is, we have Harley Ruta is going to be joining us, a congressman who's in the middle of the Mueller investigation and the Democratic's response there. Also, we're going to be talking to a great panel. We've got Jessica Yellen, Stuttering John Melendez, and Gianno Caldwell. All really interesting, all some of my favorite people, and I'm excited to get them together. Thank you so much for listening to The Issue Is podcast. Please subscribe. Please leave comments. Please let other people know about it. And please watch us on TV. Again, we air Friday nights at 10:30 p.m. on Fox 11 and Saturday mornings at 6:30 a.m. on KTVU in the Bay Area. Fox 11, of course, is in Los Angeles. Thanks for listening to The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson.